Well, we can finally do it. Lightbringer is the book from Red Rising that I finished, so Zach and I can talk full spoil basically about everything that's out in Red Rising, except that last book that hasn't come out yet. Are you ready for this, Zach?
Yeah, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Fuck Lysander.
Ouch, ouch. I mean, I don't disagree, but harsh language, man. Welcome to Fantasy for the Ages, the show where a father and son get together and talk about fantasy, science fiction, and other nerdy things we enjoy. We're going to talk about Lightbringer, book six in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga today. I'm sure we'll also speculate a little bit of what's to come in the final book, which we'll all be waiting for still for a year or so. And maybe if you enjoy this episode, don't forget to hit like, and we hope you'll subscribe. Join our channel. We're having fun here.
Please do.
Yes.
So I'm excited for this one. I don't know if everyone else is, but I've been waiting to talk about this series with you for a little while now.
Now, we're assuming everybody who's here today has read Lightbringer. They've been through all of these. So we can talk about whatever we want. We don't have to talk about the specifics of this plot from beginning to end. No, we can just talk about stuff. And yeah, why not? Let's talk about Lysander. Man, this is a character who, you know, when we first meet him, he's just a kid. And you kind of like him as a kid. You know, he's raised in the Imperial court. He is an inquisitive, sharp kid. He kind of looks up to Darrow as almost a hero figure. It's cool to read about his exploits, even though Darrow is technically, well, for a while, he's on the good side, and then his colors come out that he's really the bad side from Lysander's point of view. But still, he's big eyes when he gets to finally meet him, and then, you know, sees him kill his grandma, you know, kill his aunt. Grandma. No, his grandma, but then also Aja was.
Technically.
Was there a relation there or not?
If I'm remembering fully correctly, very loosely, which is to say, I don't believe there is a direct blood relation. However, Aja did sire Ajax with Atlas.
In a weird kind of way, yeah.
So there was the raw connection there, which, right. Lysander does have some of that through his dad.
But there was definitely a bond, okay? You know, he's like, seeing these people who are important to him slaughtered right in front of him.
Definitely the people who really raised him and taught him how to be through a lot of foundational years for him, which is unfortunate because Cassius tried.
I mean, at that moment, they could have killed Lysander, and it was on the table. I mean,
Severo would have done it.
Severo, thank you. If it was left to Severo, we don't have a Lysander problem. But go back a little bit, you know, Severo's ideas, leadership had gone badly. So he's willing to be talked down from things now. He knows judgment is not just judgment. This time it would have been, maybe.
Yeah, killing a kid is always a bad look, especially when it's killing a kid for what they might do or might become. In hindsight, we can say, man, we really wish we had killed him earlier. But at the same time, that doesn't change the fact that it was the right call at the time not to kill him. He hadn't done anything worthy of it. If anything, he had done good things for the Republic as well as the society, just kind of bridging gaps, having an avenue for peace here, really giving Cassius a purpose post-Rising. And so it wasn't the wrong call to keep him alive. But knowing where it goes and what he does, you kind of regret it.
I mean, without sparing his life, they don't easily take over, put Mustang on the throne. You know, I mean, Lysander was critical to stopping the battle right there and then. But yeah, then Cassius says, I'll take him under my wing. And they go off and play space pirates for, you know, a decade. And
unfortunately, it's not enough for him to really shift full into thinking like Cassius, because at the end of the day, he's not a Bologna. He's a loon.
And yet, There's a big part of Cassius in Lysander.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Cassius, he sucked too for a long time. For similar reasons, holding to his core, his honor, what he felt was right. This is what's driving Lysander mostly.
There's a very important distinction, though. And to me, it's as simple as Cassius acts in accordance to what he believes to be honorable. Lysander acts in accordance to what he believes is necessary at the expense of his honor if he must.
So what you're telling me is Lysander is the perfect blending of Cassius and Darrow.
A lot of it. Wow. He really does kind of have a lot of traits from a lot of these different characters that we've loved. And he's gotten to see growing up.
He's their psychic child.
While also having the true loonness, what Octavia put in him. And he's a really cool, compelling character, but he sucks. He always has all of these different moments where he could make a choice that is going to be really, really good for our story and really, really good for our heroes. And it's like, he could have a redemption arc here. This could be awesome. And he chooses, not even accidentally, doesn't stumble into it. He actively, intentionally chooses the course of action, which makes us hate him more.
Right, right.
He sees opportunity for what he believes is the right, necessary end goal. Having a reunified society under its original intended purpose and goals and that ideology. And he can make it happen. Gosh, we hope he doesn't.
So we get some big reveals in Lightbringer. Some things that finally resolve in some ways that we're like, ah, I see what happened here. And ooh, that was cool. I mean, Pierce Brown's written a pretty good story here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reveals that was interesting and frustrating at the same time was to discover what Quicksilver, what's his actual name?
Regulus.
Regulus, what he's actually decided to do.
Get out.
Yeah, peace out, man. I'm taking all my marbles. We're soaring away.
It's disappointing, but like you get it.
He has fought this battle for so long, and he's looked and seen how so many people who could do the right thing or had a chance have fallen or been corrupted. Or it doesn't matter how hard we try, it all falls apart. And yeah, it makes sense.
I was reading this book really close to when I read the Mad Atom trilogy by Margaret Atwood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot, what Regulus does here, Quicksilver, there's a lot of parallels to like the driving force behind what causes an apocalypse in that series. And so it was really nice to kind of see, yeah, we want to build our perfect little utopia where we can have people who never grow up with any of the corruption that is in this world. And we're just going to send them away as opposed to, yeah, we're going to make this perfect little world and then destroy everything else so they never have to see it. So it was a much more peaceful option, considering I also think it's very possible Quicksilver was positioned in a place to say, yeah, I'm going to just destroy everything with my robots and then we're going to restart with these people here.
Now, something that puzzles me is I feel like there's still got to be a payoff coming with Lyria.
Uh-huh.
Because she had that figment thing in her brain, and oh yeah, they took it out.
And then we just talked about it.
Come on, there's
so much.
There's been no payoff on that plot line yet, other than it kind of leads to finding Regulus, but there's more there. Come on. Book,
it was in Lightbringer that we built into, hey, she's been searching for this. She does this. She's built a particular set of skills. Not great, but like some. And has these people with her. And then all those people get taken out. And just her.
Yeah.
And she's given the choice and be like, okay, do you want to be a super war person with awesome superpowers and robot mechanics? Or do you want to just be you?
And there was a caveat, remember? Yeah.
And
we're going to fully merge this. It's going to cost you some of your memories. Some of who you are will disappear.
And I get and understand. I think from a character perspective, it's really powerful that she chose to stay who she was. She chose to stay the Red. And in a way, it shows how different she is from Darrow. That Darrow saw the necessity and said, okay, yeah, make me gold. do this. And he's really lost a lot of who he is as a Red. Lyria doesn't want to. And I respect that. But I really hope Mateo and Quicksilver just, like, behind her back a little bit were like, because you said no, we think you're actually worthy of maybe having this. So we're just going to sneaky backdoor have this in here. Really hope that is a payoff. I don't think it will be, but I want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect it will be. I just don't know how yet, but that's all right. We'll find out in time.
Let's talk about something that we've talked about in previous books, because I wanted to get to this book before we talked about it again.
Okay.
I want to talk about Severo's relationship with his dad.
Okay.
Because we get some nice heartfelt bits here, especially as Severo's in a pretty low place, understandably so.
Life and has sucked in some very hard ways.
The reveal about the Daughters of Ares and that there was more to Fitchner's plan than just what we knew. And what we knew already had multiple parts that we hadn't known about when he was still alive. And it shows really early on that Fitchner had a dream and a plan, and it included Severo. Mm-hmm. That he was building this for Severo in a way, but also with him in mind to be there, to connect, to lead. So we jump back to the Institute.
Yeah.
And we had a discussion at one point of
did we have
faith that Severo was going to take him out and would be fine and he would make it through. And I'm like, at this point, after we read Lightbringer, Fitchner absolutely believed in Severo.
Yeah. He couldn't be sure still, and he only had so much power, but...
But he loved, respected, and believed in his son in ways that he never was able to actually show him.
Now, you know, a preface here, too. He is a dad with a son. Okay, we have a relationship here, dad with a son. I don't, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I couldn't know what you'd turn out like.
No.
So when he's making plans for his son, it's based on what he hopes for his son. It's not based on the reality of who his son becomes. So there was still definitely some X factors involved here.
For sure. But I'm glad to see that your opinion has changed a little bit on their relationship as you've read more.
Another plot line I definitely want to talk about is everything that happens with Lyria, with Ephraim, with Severo's wife.
Victra.
With all that stuff that comes out related to Fa, and then how it is the spring, the launching board for what really Fa is all about. Now, I'm talking, some of that stuff happened in
the... A lot of that was back in Dark Age, but it's setup the for...
Okay? So we had this, basically, this whole drama, this whole show of Fa doing this stuff and being this person, and it's all fake, we learn here now.
It is all Atlas's play.
And Fa is basically just a hired actor.
Pretty much.
He's even got a voice modulator.
He's a real good actor. And it's one of those moments I kind of loved seeing. Because if I remember correctly, Fa is an Obsidian.
Yes.
He's not like a Gold who was faked into being an Obsidian. No, he is an Obsidian.
He was one of Atlas's.
Yeah, it again shows to me a similarity between Atlas and Darrow and how they use the people around them as weapons. Atlas did a very not Gold thing of elevating and trusting Obsidians around him. And it pays off like this. He ends up bringing the Askamani Raiders all under one banner of Fa, really kind of taking over the Obsidian Rising.
And deception. I mean, yeah, they're just using them.
But the fact that he's able to do that is because he builds this relationship and intense, almost religious loyalty from Fa without it being the religious oppression that Obsidians usually see.
Mm-hmm. Now, Atlas. This is some character, man.
Oh, so, it was.
He was initially, I mean, he's one of the Ra's.
Yeah.
From the Moon Lords, okay,
who got
taken as a
hostage ward,
adopted ward by the Loons, who then gets sent by Octavia out to the asteroids because basically, I want you out of here. So you're now going to be stuck out here chasing Askamani and dealing with stuff out there forever kind of thing.
Yeah, it was very much a, like, you're going to have to deal with this thing that is kind of impossible to deal with, and you'll spend the rest of your life doing it.
So his inner dialogue. Okay, my own family didn't care about me enough that they let me be taken as a captive by the Empress. Now, that's not what really happened, but that's how he can read it. And then I get to spend time growing up there until basically I'm exiled from there and nobody loves me and I can do whatever I want now because screw them. That's pretty much Atlas. Wow.
When you really boil it down and look at what is driving him and how does he do these things and what are his relationships with people like, he really just screams that he is a much more capable version of the Jackal.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Because the Jackal seems very capable and competent and smart.
He is very capable. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
If he was a force working for good, it'd be amazing.
That being said, he's a force
working for him, period.
I don't think he ever could truly be a force working for good, though maybe not really for evil either, because he's just so sociopathic in his idiosyncrasies. He has a vision. It's almost even like Atreides-esque in that he sees an outcome in the end and he's like, I'm going to manipulate everything to get us there. I might not see it, but that's fine.
Now, it's not at all to me shocking that the one character who seems to come the closest to respecting and understanding him is Lysander.
Yeah.
But okay, so all of this has come out into the open near the end of Lightbringer. And finally, really everything has come out into the open, and now you've got that one guy, the one of the Moon Knights,
Diomedes.
Thank you. Diomedes making a move here where he is bringing people together, and we're gonna talk this out and we're gonna come to accord because we are men of honor and we can do this.
And really it comes down to, like, Diomedes respects the hell out of Cassius. Mm-hmm. And Cassius respects him. And through that, they're able to see that Darrow can respect Diomedes eventually. And there's like a very tentative, okay, we all can like each other, trust each other to a certain extent. As people, our causes are different, but maybe they're not so different. But partially because of Cassius, Diomedes went off and built a relationship and trust and foundation with Lysander. And one of Lysander's only, like, mistakes from his perspective of things, but also a very telling move of we want to like Lysander, was when he saved Diomedes. Mm-hmm. And so it's all set up for these kind of powerhouses out in the rim now to come together and unite because of Diomedes and the connections that he's made.
But the one who's not going to let it happen is Lysander.
Yeah, he ruins it.
But where Lysander is damned for all time is what he does to Cassius.
And right there shows Cassius will do what his honor demands.
And Lysander didn't like what he felt he now had to do to Cassius, but he felt he had to kill Cassius, and that's the way it is. He's going to do what he has to do.
And then to escalate it further, to sell the ruse, he has to mangle and truss him up like a puppet.
Yeah.
As this horrid display, and then launch orbital bombardment. It's like, you just don't let the punches stop once you get them going.
Now, what I saw here at the end of the book, basically, was a move where I'm like, are you kidding? That's not going to work. And then to realize what's really going on, you know, where he's put up this sham now and saying, you know, he was attacked and look, and he's even wounded because he wounded himself and all that. And no one's going to buy this. And he knows no one's going to buy this. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter that no one buys it. He can use it as justification to nuke them all to hell. And it's the story you can paint that matters, not the reality.
Especially
so real world.
Especially because he doesn't have to convince main players. He needs to be able to justify this later to people who weren't here.
To the stupid peons who will believe any line you feed them. again, this is real world. Sad to say, but people will buy a good story. And the winners get to define what the reality is that we're going to now be fed. That's what he's prepping for. That's it. For the eventual end, when he can go back and look and see, all this was justified. I did just what I had to do. I had no choice. Yes, it was horrible that I had to wipe out a whole population, but my hands were tied. They put me in this corner. I did what I had to do.
Now, there is a lot of darkness in this book, which is a little ironic considering it's called Lightbringer. But there are some really good moments showing strength and transformation for the good within some of our characters. There's a whole section of that battle on Phobos that is just really fun to see certain characters kind of shine that we don't always see a lot of. I, in this like second chunk of Red Rising, have loved getting to be inside of Mustang's head.
Okay.
Because it's not something that we got early on. We always had to kind of guess, and we can see it and we can extrapolate it, but we don't always get it. And seeing how she thinks of the populace and holding these positions and strategizing is honestly makes her a more rounded out character to us that I enjoy seeing.
Okay.
On the flip side, Victor just continues to be a badass.
Yeah. I'm happy in the end. I mean, they did it through the story, but in the end, especially with Lyria's help and unwillingness to back down, we get Volga back into the fold.
Yes.
We get, I'm going to say Volga 2.0. I mean, she's upgraded now in the way she looks at things, who she is as a person, who her people look to her. The way it was worked out that she becomes the ruler of the Obsidians was brilliant. And the fact that she wants nothing to do with this is why she's the perfect person to be leading.
It took the problem and trauma to get her to the point to be ready. But this is what Sephi was really looking for when she was like, let's get Volga in here. She should be the successor, the heir, but she wasn't ready when Sephi was looking for her.
Yeah.
She is here.
Not at all. I love how she's mad at Darrow, in part. They don't have a talking about this, but she talks with Lyria about this, I think it is. She's mad at Darrow for doing this to her. I mean, he manipulated the situation, so of course they're voting for me. Why?
Which is funny, because
exactly what he did. I love it. He did
manipulate it, but he manipulated it by not manipulating it.
Yes, yes. It was perfect. And so, you know, she's got the Obsidians. We've also got the daughters of Sons of Ares. Daughters of what?
Is it not Daughters of Ares as well?
No. Daughters of...
Pick a different Greek god.
Artemis. Is it Daughters of Artemis?
Artemis is her god. Probably Athena. Athena's the leader of this section. I thought it was still Daughters of Ares, but is led by Athena.
Yeah, wow, I'm blanking on that. But okay, we've got the whole other rebellion group. They're in with this now. They're all coming together, and we're prepped for one big massive showdown. Let's have it all out. Okay, that's what's going to happen as we race back to the core now and try to save Mars, save the people who are still holding on. And there's going to be a big showdown. What are your predictions? That's what we really need to talk about now.
There are certain things that I'm excited for and looking forward to. And then there are certain things where I'm like, I might be excited and looking forward to this being built up this way. And then we'll be very happy when my expectations are subverted because they go out like a little bitch instead of a big fight.
So speaking of, let me put on one specific. How does Lysander die? Or does he?
I don't know if he does.
Ooh.
And it's a really
Lyria to kill him.
It's a really weird position because I think we're in a place where I don't know if the story actually wraps up without him dying.
Right.
Like, I don't know if we can call it a conclusion.
We don't want another trilogy, you know, well, like the
Chris
first
Brown
one
doesn't.
That left it undone.
He's intending that when this is done, he is done writing in this, at least for a good while. He's moving on to something else.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy for him.
We want this wrapped up.
But that means it does need to actually wrap up. So I really can't see Lysander surviving it unless, and here's my wild thing. I think it is possible.
Don't tell me he's going to have a Cassius redemption arc.
That our good guys lose.
Ooh.
And this ends with Lysander basically on top, starting the society over, it's better than it was because of all this problematic stuff, but it is still the society, and we get kind of a Pax Romana, beginning of a new golden age of the society, which isn't like good from what we've been seeing. What is the good side? What is the bad side? But theoretically, the society had a reason it started in the first place. And so we're forced to consider, is Lysander right? He's done awful things, and we don't like this. But is he right?
Okay, here's a couple postulations that I don't know if we'll see these things, but I think it would be cool if they happen. One kind of goes with a theme that's been prevalent in here. I think Lysander's side is the one that's coming out on the winning side, not winning, but on the winning side. You know, they're definitely the ones who have the upper hand late in the book. It's really, we don't know how we're going to pull this out. Darrow and group have not given up, but they're really be under the gun. Things have not gone well. There have been some surprises, of course. And Lysander, it looks like it's going to come out on top. And Quicksilver shows up. Kind of had a change of heart, came back, pulls some Deus Ex Machina stuff with his robot things, which is going to be just enough to swing it back the other direction. So that's a possibility, and I think that is awesome.
I don't think it'll happen. I hope we don't.
Yeah, I don't think it would be true to what they've built. So
I think a Deus Ex would feel so cheap for how much this series has built on like the growth of individual characters and seeing that transformation, that just having kind of an almost third party 11th hour thing doesn't feel right.
Good point. It'd probably be cheap, but man, I'd love to see it anyway. The other thing is, I don't think Severo makes it to the end of the book. His story arc, I think he's going to follow in the footsteps of his father all the way to the end. And he's going to end up dying a hero, but he's not going to make it to the end. He'll leave a legacy, and what they finally build then is partly in Severo's honor.
I'll do you a step further while pulling it back.
Okay.
Severo lives.
You think Darrow doesn't make it?
Well, yes, but that is a separate thing. That's a separate one.
You don't think there's any happy ending for Darrow in the end? No shot of that? Because I want the happy ending for Darrow.
I think if things go the way that Darrow really is hoping for, that is his happy ending. He served his life purpose more or less, and he gets to be kind of peaceful in the Vale, remembering this.
That little cabin on a lake off by themselves with their kids in peace and quiet.
No, they don't get that. And I think they had a moment back in Iron Gold where they recognized they're never going to get that.
Well, you're probably right.
But no, I think Severo lives, would have died in a hero's blaze of glory kind of thing. But Victra shoves him out of the way, basically, does it instead.
Oh.
And Severo has to live without Victra raising their kids still.
Ouch! That's a good story arc.
And so Severo has to basically retire to the single dad life.
Because Victra comes from the Julii's that are all about themselves, and she's broken the mold, and wow, that would be a nice finish for her. Yeah, because we've seen her come so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. I like it. I'm sure Pierce Brown is still in the final edits here and will watch our video and might steal your idea. Yeah,
totally.
That's great.
Totally. Yeah. I haven't even talked Lightbringer. My favorite part of that book.
Okay.
Is how a certain combat scene is written. Because Pierce Brown, I love how he writes combat. I think it's exciting, compelling. Sometimes we get vivid descriptors, but other times we get like kind of very Robert Jordan, the name of various different moves kind of thing. And okay. It flows together very well. But the description of Darrow basically designing his own fighting style mid-fight with Fa was one of the most beautifully written fight scenes I think I've ever read. It was one of those things where it's like, this is a impactful, tense fight scene.
Yeah,
and I'm getting emotional by the feeling symbolic poetry-esque side of like what this is meaning as opposed to what he's doing.
I agree. That was really well written. Yeah.
And I'm very excited to see him use that more.
He gave a name to his style.
It's like the wind through the mines or something. It's
yes.
Because it's the idea that even through all the stone and stuff, through the cracks, the wind is still blowing.
Right.
It's not fighting or bending or breaking. It's just continuing to go through regardless of the obstacles.
Right. So that was cool. All right.
And I'm excited to see Darrow using that with his round 3, 4, 7 with Apollonius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Darrow got his ass kicked when he tried to use the Will Away at the beginning of Lightbringer.
Which, by the way, was a great choice by Pierce Brown to say, you know, this ultimate style of fighting that nobody could beat a decade ago. Yeah, some people have figured out how to beat it. I mean, that's real.
Yeah, people you don't come up with an
ultimate style and then no one ever can touch you. That's not reality. There's always another best thing and then another best thing. That's how the world works. So this was really well designed.
And so now with Darrow having made essentially his own style, no one knows exactly what to do in counter with that. And I think we're going to see him beautifully cut through Golds.
See, Darrow could end up on a mountaintop with people coming to study under him for the rest of his life.
I think the closest we get to a happy ending is if Darrow takes a little bit of a Lorne Arcos position and more or less like steps away and says, I want nothing to do with this anymore. But he's still revered as
that. I could live with that. I could live with that.
So it's possible.
Okay. Anything else we should talk about?
Just briefly, so you know I'm on the TikTok sometimes, and I've been seeing, I don't know how I ended up in this part of TikTok, because I ghost there like I do every other social media I don't like or send or whatever things, but I've just been seeing Pierce Brown and Red Rising stuff, specifically a couple interviews he's done where he's talked about like adaptations.
Okay.
And supposedly, as of right now, it is like semi in development. They're still working on scripts with a streamer. He couldn't say which streaming service, but they have moved from it being like a movie to a show. And it is still like in the works of actually happening. So I'm real excited.
I love that. This is so cinematic. It'll definitely make a great show. And I could live with it being a show instead of a movie. That would be fine.
And I think what it was more or less was like Universal had the rights for a little bit. And they just like they couldn't agree on a script, and he was always like, it's not it. And right now the current issue with various scripts and things that are coming is the streamer, whoever it is, writes something and then they're not satisfied with it because they want it to be closer to the book, which is a really nice thing to hear, that like the people making it want it closer to the written source.
Yeah,
and that's really cool.
I agree.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good spot then to wrap up. We are fans of the series. Your mom has struggled reading this. She's on Golden Sun, and it really hasn't taken off for her. She's kind of like, I mean, it's okay, but it's not my kind of thing. I went, well, some books are like that.
And I do know some people this doesn't resonate with. It really does with me.
I had no problem. Yeah.
And I hate feeling a little stereotypical, it fitting into any box of why this would resonate with me. But at the same time, I just think it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we recommend to everybody we see and talk to, but you guys,
if you don't like it, I'm not offended, but read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap by talking up some other things, random things about books, what we're reading and all of that stuff. And, you know, we are well over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube now. We're really, happy about that. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And one of the things I just dropped yesterday was an episode about the benefits of being a BookTuber. One of those benefits is sitting in the center of the screen here. This book by Pete Kramer. I'm reading it right now, Chesapeake Bay Monsters. I have a signed copy he sent to us for free. I'd be happy to provide it to you after I'm done. It's really good. I'm halfway through this book now, and it's just fun. It's basically about sea monsters. Very specific.
I assume in Chesapeake Bay.
In Chesapeake Bay, yes. And what some characters are doing around it and such. And it's, you don't have to take it very seriously. It's just, I'm enjoying the read, and it's so easy to keep reading, which is so refreshing. After the book that it replaced, because the fact I'm reading a physical copy. But that's
after Duma Key, right? I
finally finished Duma Key 7 months with that
book. Was it worth 7 months?
No.
Was it worth it?
No. It was not. The ending's pretty good. I flew through the last 20% of that book, but oh my goodness. I'm done with Stephen King for a while after that. So this has been so refreshing to read a book like Chesapeake Bay Monsters. I don't know, Pete Kramer, you may be also benefiting from just bounce back. You know, I'm just so glad to read something else, but I'm very entertained. Above Your Head on the Screen is Toll the Hounds, book 8 of Malazan. I'm on that book now, and it's off to a great start. It's the longest book in Malazan, Book of the Fallen. Whew. And people have warned me, gets very philosophical and stuff. Some people don't like it. Well, so far, I'm loving everything I'm reading.
Yeah, because you've never liked philosophy.
And then right below me is The Courts of Chaos. That's book 5 of The Chronicles of Amber.
The last that you've read previously, right? Because you only read right. The first 5.
And I finished that yesterday. So I've started book 6, which is the start of the second arc of The Chronicles of Amber. Now I'm into new territory. But this first arc, I barely remembered it. It was 40 years ago I read it. So much better than I remembered. I really enjoyed it. Really entertaining. I was way too young to fully appreciate what I was reading when I read it the first time. I know that now.
Which is a little wild to me because, like, I have an understanding just based from you that this is fantasy, probably mm-hmm. adult fantasy, but, like,
yes.
Each book is like 200 pages. So I'm sitting here going, That feels like it's written for younger. It's just short.
It's not. It's just a different style. All 5 of them are shorter together than The Eye of the World.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have an episode that's dropping today on the first 5 books, spoiler light, of The Chronicles of Amber. Because I finished it and I immediately wanted to talk about it. So I'm looking forward to you reading it. I do believe you're going to like it. It holds up. These are written in the 70s. The second arc's in the 80s. But it holds up.
I will get there soon-ish. Okay. It's sitting here next to me. So I finished up what it is written so far of Tamsin Muir's The Locked Tomb series.
Okay.
So I'd finished Known of the Ninth, and now I'm eagerly awaiting Electo the Ninth.
Okay.
Muir has this
series was good start to finish.
I loved it.
Okay.
Not sure if you would.
It's on my TBR, but it's buried.
The way that she ends books is simultaneously really cool and interesting. And usually so confusing because, like, by the time you get to the epilogue, you basically get rid of any sort of proper noun and you just refer to people by pronouns or describing them vaguely because you're seeing from a character or an outside perspective that you didn't see for most of the time. Mm-hmm. And you're left to kind of piece together, oh, goodness, what actually just happened? And then you get to the next book and it doesn't explain it right away. And you have to keep reading. It's really good. But anyways, finished that one. I mentioned, I think last time that we recorded, that I was doing the next of the Farseer trilogy.
Yeah.
And I need to correct that. We finished that episode and I went off and I went, I just said I was reading the second book in that. And I gave it the title for the last book in that. Oops. So, no,
by the way, that is on our screen. It's just off the side right now.
Which book's on our screen then?
Well, I'd have to open a different screen to tell you.
Don't worry about it. It should be Royal Assassin, which is the second book. And I'm close to the end, but I have not finished that yet.
Yeah, no, Assassin's Quest is what was on the screen.
Which is the third one, which is what I said I was reading. It's not. Not yet. That's coming soon, but not yet. But I did start the Greenbone Saga. It's down here. Yep. This first book, yep. Jade City.
Jade City, you're still on that?
No, I finished that. I'm on Jade War, the second book.
Okay, I will update.
It is an interesting read. I've been enjoying it. There are certain things that I'm like, I don't think they resonate with me as well as they would with certain other people, just because a kind of like mafia mob story thing mm-hmm. isn't always my vibe. I am really enjoying it, and that it is kind of complex in some of its themes and the characters' motivations. We love a more like Japanese-inspired honor system. Characters are fairly well written. For people who have been on the side of TikTok where they go, is there spice? A little bit. Not a lot, okay. But a couple of pages here and there. But if you look at the actual like book and like flip to the back, people talk about comparing it to a new modern take on like a Godfather type story. And I think that's not too far off.
Okay.
My sacrilegious take is I don't love The Godfather. So that's where I'm like, I don't think I like this as much as some people do, but I am enjoying it.
Okay. Reading anything else?
I don't know if I can say I'm still reading that Malazan book because I haven't touched it in like a month.
Dead House Gate.
But I am technically still reading that.
Okay. All right. Really, you know, those first two books, they're building foundation that everything else relies on.
But it's not for a lack of enjoyment. It's for a lack of format. I don't like reading on my phone very much.
That's why Duma Key took me so long. The wrong format.
At any given time, I'd much rather pick up the physical book or an audiobook. I've got access to other books.
We are just not wired the same, my son. This much is true. That's a good spot to stop then, I think. I will point out, I asked on a recent episode, do people like the banner we put around the background with all these pictures, or should we get rid of that? It's not working. And no, the only people who responded said, no, keep those. We really like seeing the books.
I like books.
The books are staying.
Honestly, at some point, maybe when I'm not in this office, so might be like a couple years down the line or something, maybe I'll actually design my space better so you could see books behind me better. Rather than just, you know, they're there.
Yeah, yeah. We had a couple episodes where you returned facing that direction, but clearly your dog is feeling better now.
At least better.
Okay. Well, let's wrap. We've got other stuff we want to record today, so we're going to close on this one. Thanks for watching, everybody. It's been fun hanging out with you. It's been fun hanging out with Zach. We'll talk to you next time.